And now it's my distinct pleasure to present the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy to the captain of the Columbus crew, Guillermo Barros Escaloto.
Of the 2008 MLS Super Draft, the Los Angeles Football Craft select from the University of Akron.
This happened in Argentina, maybe people died. Someone could die, you know?
If they took Nuevo Chicago and they said, we're moving it to Rosario.
Yeah. Still a chance for a fourth goal here. Affel drives forward. Affel scores! What a goal! It is amazing! King Harrison grabs the crown in second half stoppage time!
Hey buddies, it's the Massive Report podcast brought to you by Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street, a 21 and up arcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. www.oldnortharcade.com. Hit it up. We're going to be a little bit, we're down a couple men tonight for the Massive Report podcast. Myself, Bart Logan, with you. We also have Patrick Murphy. How are you doing, Pat?
I'm good. I'm here.
We're glad to have you. And we have Sam Fahmy back. A rare treat, Sam. Always a pleasure.
Why, thank you, sir. I'm glad to be here.
And then, of course, our other compatriots, Ralph and Alex Stanek, out this week. They'll be rejoining us next week. Maybe. We'll see. If you guys really like it without them, tweet us and let us know. If you've got questions throughout the week, also tweet the Massive Report and use the hashtag MRPod, or go to Facebook and the Facebook at Massive Report. But we got to talk a little bit about the recap, the game that from last week, that disappointing 1-0 loss in Bridgeview. We'll also get an update on the efforts to save the crew. It was maybe even a more eventful week off or away from the pitch for the future, at least of this team in Columbus. And then we've got, we'll touch on some other news from around the league and get your preview for this weekend's clash at the home of Navy, Annapolis, Maryland, as crew are taking on DC United. But first, Pat and Sam, let's head back to this past Saturday. It felt like, you know, a game crew, as we mentioned, lose 1-0, but you know, Sam, I know you were able to catch it, and I know, Pat, you've caught up on it a little bit. It seems like one of those games that just the crew couldn't get any, had no luck whatsoever.
I think that's a good way to put it. Watching the game again today, it was really one of those games where you create enough chances to win, and I think for the most part, they defended pretty well. I mean, they gave Chicago some chances. Obviously, there was the mistake for the goal, which we can talk about in a second. But I do really think that this is a game, and you mentioned it before the show started, Bart, that, you know, if you create enough of those chances and play that kind of game, a lot of nights you're going to end up getting a win. And I agree with that. I think, you know, you saw multiple efforts on goal. Some actually really good chances, I thought, build-up wise, counterattacking, hit the post, hit the crossbar. You know, if you can just get one of those to go in, you know, we're talking about a different thing. I think coming away with a point from Chicago, you feel all right about it. But yeah, I think that's one of those games that you just kind of put behind you and move on. In talking to Berhalter and some of the guys today, I think that's the attitude they're taking. I don't think anyone's hanging their heads after a defeat like that. I think, you know, there was more disappointment the week prior with the way they played and kind of gave up that lead against Vancouver at home than there was this game. So, you know, you don't like to lose 2 in a row. This team hasn't lost 3 in a row since 2014, I believe. You know, but they're not looking at it as, you know, kind of a must win or anything. I think it's too early in the season. So, yeah, disappointing result ultimately, but I don't think the performance really reflected the final score.
Yeah, I think exactly what Murph said is that It just seems like it was one of those games of which the ghosts of Toyota Field come back and bite the crew in the ass. And like, it was just inexplicable. It's like the force field was up wherever the Chicago goal was, and it kind of drove you nuts because you're like, you're doing everything that you can to score, and you're getting as close as you possibly can to score, yet it's just not going into the net, not crossing that line. In the great scheme of things, I mean, even outside of the one mistake by Zach Steffen, I don't know. It sucks because it's a loss, but it's early in the season. This is one of those things that you rather they figure out now than later. And if we look at the overall body of work of Zach Steffen, the fans should, one, not hold this against him for sure. And two, I am pretty sure he pretty damn learned from that never ever to do it again. He should have just booted the ball down the field and, you know, not tried to really build up from the back. But yeah, it had its ups and downs. They went through phases where they were playing really well, and then they went through phases where they couldn't get out of their own way. But I don't know. It wasn't the best game, but it was Chicago at Toyota Field, which has always been a bane for crew teams, regardless of who's playing and who's coaching. And it is what it is. Just chuck it out the window and move on to something else.
And you talk about that goal. I think Colin, in his Anatomy of a Goal piece, did a pretty good job of breaking down, you know, what happened, what probably should have happened. And it's hard to say exactly, you know, without knowing tactically what they're trying to do there. But it looked to me, in watching it a few times, that's almost a reflex or a play by Zach to, you know, he gets the ball back in that scenario. He's immediately playing a one-touch ball when he's under pressure to the middle for what should have been, it looked like, Will Trapp. And, you know, I think you can put a little blame on Will for maybe not being where he should have been, assuming I'm reading the situation right. A little bit on Zach for maybe, you know, just reacting instead of getting his head up and seeing what was available. You know, it's funny, in rewatching today, there was a play right at the beginning of the game where he gets a similar back pass. Obviously, Chicago was pressuring high the whole time there. And, you know, that time he did just kick it. And, you know, it was a little different scenario in terms of where they pressured from. But I thought, you know, that was interesting. And then a couple minutes after the goal, he gets another ball and he kind of chips it up. But again, it goes right to a Fire player, you know, so we were talking about it today at practice tonight. I don't think that it's something that's going to affect Zach. You know, I saw a couple people mention, you know, whether or not this would be his Steve Clark moment. Mm-hmm. And first of all, I don't think this is anywhere near the same kind of stage that Steve made that mistake on. And I also think that, you know, Zach's confidence and, you know, his in himself is high enough that, you know, he moved past that pretty quickly. You know, I don't think he'll give it much more thought. But I thought other than that, he played a pretty good game. There was a moment a couple minutes in where Chicago came down the right-hand side and guy played a ball across the box and Zach had to dive like outward to make a save. And it's just to make a save like that, you know, because you have to be watching the ball. You have to be aware of
a good read.
Yeah, you have to be aware of where the other attacker is and know that you don't have a defender there. And then you have to, you know, dive out and get to the ground. So, you know, I hope there's no ill will towards Zach. You know, obviously throughout the course of a season, when you play that kind of possession, build out of the back style, you're going to have errors that different people make. You know, Josh Williams gave a ball up at the back at one point that they didn't get punished for. It just happens. You know, we've talked about Jonathan's mistakes prior to this. You know, so I think that you know, everybody's going to have a mistake. You just hope it doesn't cost you. Obviously, this one did.
I think. Sorry, Bart. Pertaining to what Patrick said, that's exactly a big thing. Is that will I think they've almost toyed with Fire a little bit, trying to the whole build from the back all the time, and sometimes this is. I hope this helps in the decision making of when to try to build from the back and then when to just boot the ball, and that they shouldn't try to force building from the back if they're under that kind of pressure. And yeah, that. You know, obviously that's going to come with practice, but it had to burn them in order for them to basically realize that it's not always going to be something that you can do. But the other, on the upside, you know, Dax McCarthy was not really a ton of danger. Neither was their forward.
Nikolic.
I mean, outside of that ball, really didn't have a ton going on. So I have a hard time classifying it as a bad game when I think they did pretty much all they can. It just didn't go their way.
And I think Chicago did, you know, the high press, we've seen a lot of teams use it against the Crew. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I thought Chicago did it pretty effectively. You know, Columbus was able to break it a handful of times, and obviously they created a number of chances. But, you know, it did lead to a number of turnovers. That one, obviously, the most costly. But, you know, credit to Chicago and the game plan. They, you know, played a similar style of team in Portland the week before, so they were a little bit accustomed to that, I think. But, you know, going on the road in MLS, we've talked about it plenty of times, it is tough. You know, you hate to see this on back-to-back weeks, but, you know, it's Chicago's never been an easy place to play for them, like you said, Sam.
And, you know, to the point, I do also want to, while I agree with you guys on that goal, I also want to give a little bit of credit. I mean, this is Nikolic is no slub. This is a guy who, you know, was among the league leaders, I think, until like the last day or whatever in goals scored. And then I believe didn't Villa eclipse him. But that's a savvy and good read from him. And that's probably something that they see from playing this Crew team regularly and kind of knowing that MO about playing it out the back. So, you know, he's able to read it and scores a good goal on his part, but an opportunistic one. And you mentioned, you know, the turnover earlier from Josh Williams. And I think we've seen kind of throughout the season with these Greg Berhalter teams, you know, over the course of 3-4 years that even when you do have players that are versed in this system and have experience, it takes time, you know, as a unit to get together, to gel and really understand and know where everyone's going to be with it each season. One player, a new addition to it, a new wrinkle, is Milton Valenzuela, who again, back in the lineup, back as a starter this weekend, had another strong performance, a good opportunity on net that or off target, but did have a good chance there in the game, and is again just looking very impressive, not just in that attacking play, but also breaking up a couple. It was, I believe, a counter that was a 2-on-1 for Chicago. They had a very good opportunity to go up 2-0, and Milton Valenzuela just completely negates it. They don't even get a chance, and Crew get bailed out by the 19-year-old.
Yeah, I thought he was very good again. You know, we talked last week about them, you know, leaving him out and wanting to rest him and whatnot. But, you know, this is a guy, unless he needs rest, I think he's got to be on the field. You know, in my mind, yes, he's a 19-year-old who hasn't played a lot of soccer at this, you know, higher level, but he's also a 19-year-old who should have legs to kind of run for days and whatnot. So I think he's, you know, been the team's defensive MVP so far this year. I know it's early, but I'm really impressed. That play that you talked about, Bart, I think it was on Campos after the corner. Yeah, I mean, you see that, you see it coming down, you see that there's only one Crew player back, and you know, it's kind
of panic
mode.
Thank God it was him.
Right, and he just, I mean, it was a perfect tackle, because you either, you know, a guy gets by you and he's in on Zach, or, you know, you go for a tackle and you miss and it's a red card. And, you know, again, 19 years old, you know, makes that tackle very calmly, you know, perfect slide to break that up. And like you said, I think, you know, he continues to show what he can do in the attack. I thought it was interesting, that shot you mentioned really early on. I don't know what happened, having watched it on TV, it was hard to tell, but he comes from like the right side of the penalty box.
Yeah.
Like, the shot came from almost the penalty spot. And, you know, we haven't seen him over there. I don't know why he ended up over there, but yeah, just popping up in good attacking positions. You know, I think, again, this has been a very good signing. I think he led the team in tackles, which is another good sign. You know, Chicago seemed to really push back Harrison awful, which we saw Toronto do too, and try and attack down that side and negate him a little bit. But I thought Milton kind of made up for it on the left-hand side.
No, I was just going to reiterate that you're starting to see Milton's defensive strength even more in a game like Chicago's versus his offensive strength. And He had like three balls in a row where it made it all the way to the end line before he crosses it. And one was a really good cross that I think Zardes hit the post. One was over everybody's head, and one went out for a goal kick. But I think his comfort level on that left side is still from the offensive side. But from the defensive side, man, if he only plays defense that well and dances around people like he does or tackles, that was such a clean tackle on the counterattack. I mean, that was textbook. And I'll take that every day.
My one concern out of this, I guess one thing, we might have to have Guilherme Torres do a write-up to see if they've got the fullback switching along with the wingers, you know, with that shot in there from the right. But bring up another, you know, point. I'm just worried if this game also drives home the fact that Giassi Zardes can only score against Canadian teams.
Yeah, hopefully that doesn't end up being the case. But I know there is, you know, a bit of concern. I saw some people responding to tweets and whatnot about, you know, you only score once against Vancouver. You had your struggles in Philly offensively, you know, and then obviously this game. You're creating chances, as we talked about, but you need to put them away, you know, in order to be successful. And this is a team that, we talked about it in the beginning of the season, lost so many of their goals from last year. Not that Ola Kamara was the world's most efficient striker, but, you know, Justin obviously added some things. And, you know, we've seen Pedro score once, but he's yet to prove that he's a scoring machine. I do think that they're going to be fine. I think when you're creating the number of chances that they are, you know, you end up putting them away. You're going to have games when it just doesn't fall your way. But, you know, I'll be interested to see, you know, this is the DC team next week that we'll talk about in a minute, but that you were able to score on and able to, you know, create a lot of attacking chances and be efficient. You know, I think this is a team that shouldn't get shut out often. And, you know, to see it happen twice here early in the year, I understand why people are concerned, but, you know, I do think they'll find it. I think Giassi is proven to be pretty good. Albeit only against Canadian teams, but I think he'll break out of that one.
There's a lot of changes going on too. Like the system is the same, but you have Martinez, who's still fairly raw, and you have Pedro, and then you have the whole thing about more switching between those two as they flip sides. You have Milton and Harrison, and teams have started to zero in on Harrison and kind of, like Patrick said, tried to take him out of the game like they kind of did in Chicago for long stretches. So there's a lot of changes going on. What I do like from what I am seeing is that Harrison is taking more shots, Milton is taking shots, Pedro is taking shots. There's more players that are taking shots towards goal. And while Abu had a nice shot that just went over the bar, or that hit the bar, you know, that kind of thing.
Nico Hansen had that chance.
Nico Hansen had a shot. So I really like seeing that. And in the great scheme of things, one of those shots ends up in a rebound, and you end up like with a goal like Zardes against Vancouver. So, you know, the more this comes, I think this is going to get better as the season goes on, as long as they continue to do that and take shots and make. I mean, a lot of these guys have really good shots, just they gotta figure out how to get it on frame as opposed to above or aside it. The other thing that I did notice is that there was a couple of times in the second half where Zardes got the ball and he was out off to the wing, whether it was left or right. His pass back was not the best, but he is moving, so he is able to get touches on the ball. How that translates, I don't know how that translates. I still think that we absolutely need another striker, because Adam John is definitely not the answer.
Not necessarily a striker, but adding to the offensive firepower, so to speak, and guys that are willing to shoot. You know, it looks like Mike Grella is going to be back soon.
Wow.
And I mean, him and Gaston Saro again were involved with all the team stuff today, it appeared. So, you know, that's another guy who's obviously proven he can be a goal scoring threat, be a setup guy from the wings. Not afraid to shoot at all. I think it'll be interesting to see once he is ready to go. And Greg said last week that they'd like to get those two guys into an exhibition game before they really try him in a in an MLS game. But once he is ready to go, you know, how does that change? I don't think you change the starting lineup just because I think both wingers have been good. But, you know, how does that change the guys you have on the bench? You know, Nico Hansen, Luis Argudo have both been on the bench so far this year. You know, do you take a guy, one of those two guys off who have given you some good stuff off the bench so far this year and insert Grella? You know, I think that'll be an interesting decision once Greg has to make it. But, you know, one I don't think you're upset about. But, yeah, I think he will be an addition offensively for sure once he gets in there and give them another, you know, a different kind of look as well.
I think one of the other things that we need to consider is that the front four for this team, it's been pretty consistent for some time. You looked at over the course of Greg Berhalter's first couple seasons, you had Ethan Finley and Justin Miram on your wings, Frederico Higuain there at the 10, and then A. Kamara, at least, there at the 9. But this season, right now, through these six games, you're looking at more or less three new players in there. Albeit Pedro Santos did get a bit of a baptism last year in Berhalter's system, but Christian Martinez, pretty limited experience, all things being equal with the team. And then Giassi Zardes, obviously new. And you have to be encouraged, I think, with the amount of chances that they're generating. And when you just look at the track records for both Pedro Santos and Zardes, last season notwithstanding, you have to think that those goals are going to be coming.
I agree. And I'd even, you know, now throw Artur in there, as I think he's starting to get more comfortable in the attack. You know, but yeah, those are the
four. I'll say, did you see that chip? He was trying to pull a Pipa.
Right. And, you know, I don't think you see that from him, you know, most of last season. I think, you know, towards the end of the year and into the playoffs, we did see him, obviously he scored, but, you know, we did see him take more shots and just be involved more offensively. And I think that part of his game's coming. But yeah, I think this front four is, while they have created chances, we've seen goals and assists from all of them. You know, it's still a group that's learning each other. And then, you know, you bring guys off the bench that are new in Luis Argudo. And then Nico Hansen, another guy who, while he played last year, was relatively limited due to the injuries. You know, it's still a work in progress. And I think despite the fast start to this year, Greg Berhalter's teams have kind of always been, you know, slow starters as the team learns the system and you know, kind of gels within the system. I think this year has been better because of the guys they brought back. But, you know, I guess my point is I'm not concerned offensively. I think that, you know, as the season progresses, you're going to see fewer games like Philadelphia and Chicago where, you know, even if they don't score on a ton of their chances, they're able to finish enough to get a point maybe on the road or whatnot. So, you know, I'm not too concerned. I do like very much what I've seen from Giassi Zardes, despite, you know, what we may have thought coming in. I think he's, as Sam said, making sure he's on the ball, getting in different spots and putting himself in a good position in front of goal. And obviously the other guys are contributing as well. You know, I can't say how wrong I've been about Christian Martinez and his play to start this year, because, you know, I've really been impressed with the way he's able to hold the ball, the passes he's starting to make. So, you know, I think it's a very dangerous front four. You know, maybe the last two games plus the Philly game notwithstanding. But, yeah, I'm not too concerned about it, frankly.
I'm glad we have this on record, because your comments about Christian Martinez are going to make Alex Stanek very, very, very happy.
You know, I think in credit to Alex for liking what he did, you know, I saw a guy who, you know, I just never saw, and maybe it was because it was just limited amounts, but even in the scrimmages and stuff, he just made a lot of mistakes. And I didn't think that there'd be enough time for him to kind of grow into a player that would, you know, at least with this team, would would blossom like this. But, you know, I think he's made a big step this offseason. And I think we talked about it last week or maybe the week before, but the fact that he is getting regular minutes, I think, has calmed him down. You know, he's able to kind of just play his game instead of looking to make something happen every time he's on the ball. And I think that's made a big difference as well.
Certainly, I agree with you there. The effort's kind of always been there with Christian. We've made the jokes about him being the FIFA player just on turbo all the time, but that he's kind of combining it and showing that the skill is there, and some of the patience when it needs to be. It is certainly an encouraging sign for Columbus and for this team in the future. Some more encouragement, at least for the future of this team, came last week in the form of some developments away from the pitch in efforts to the legal battle, at least, that's going on to help ensure the crew are, in fact, saved. The first being Friday when Mayor Andrew Ginther released an open letter to Precourt Sports Ventures and MLS, a response to the letter that the MLS's legal counsel sent to the city and Mike DeWine a few weeks ago, trying to serve that as the purpose or their notice of their intent to cease playing games at Mapfre Stadium, and that their belief that Ohio Revised Code 967 does not apply to him. That's the Modell law. Mayor Ginther and the city responded Friday by saying why we believe the Modell law does apply to you, and that you haven't even provided notice. One of the interesting developments from that letter. And then also indications that Alex Fisher and the Columbus partnership are readying offers to purchase the team, or at least a share in the team, on the caveat that Anthony Precourt forks over the books so they can look at it and see what a real offer is, or a reasonable offer is. I think this is a really interesting ask and development, especially when you weigh it with some of the developments that have come out over the in the days since, including today with the announcement about DC United, the planned sale there for as much as $500 million. But the caveat there is that $400 million of that is tied into the new stadium.
The thing I think will be most interesting here is what happens. Well, first of all, what, you know, if they are legally forced to open their books, what information we get out of that, but also, you know, what these offers are and who they come from. And, you know, assuming that becomes public knowledge, I'll be very interested to see just what kind of interest there is in this team. You know, obviously I think Save the Crew has, and just the whole thing in general has opened some people's eyes that maybe, you know, weren't interested in this team before because, you know, they saw poor attendance numbers, they didn't see much benefit. But, you know, the amount of effort by the Save the Crew people, the backing that they've been able to get, and the amount of attention it's drawn, I think has created interest that you know, potentially could surprise people in terms of who is willing to get involved with this team in the future. And I think that'll be interesting. But yeah, I think, like you said, all of these are certainly positive signs. You know, the legal stuff, I think, is just so up in the air because it's all uncharted waters, that, you know, it's really tough to say what's going to come of that. But, you know, I think Alex Fisher and everybody involved in the Columbus partnership are doing all the right things. You know, I've been a little critical of that group, thinking that at times they were kind of sitting on their hands when maybe it was time to act. But, you know, it turns out that these guys actually know what they're doing.
There's a reason they're running all those Fortune 500 companies.
Yeah, I guess so. What do I know?
They've been like very, very strategic. Here's my thoughts on this whole thing. First of all, I don't think we see or get anything out of the book openings.
Neither do
I. Because I think they're going to be under heavy NDAs But I think this is smart, and this shows that they're not just buying the team in order to keep it to Columbus, but these business owners or business groups or whatever are actually trying to make sure that they are buying either a viable business or a business that they can make viable. And by opening the books, they kind of get an insight into what that is. Having said that, I think all this legal stuff, including the motion that was filed by Zach Klein, is an attempt to push MLS and Precourt Sports Ventures into making a move basically under pressure. And they're between a rock, that is what's happening, Save the Crew movement here in Columbus, and a hard place, which is Austin, not really giving them any solid indication of yay or nay. In fact, they're just being meh at best. So you're basically applying pressure on PSV and MLS to make a move that either they're going to, it's going to be the right move, or they're going to regret the whatever move they're going to make that's not the right move. You're not giving them a ton of options, but you are saying, we're willing and we're serious and we are making everything public showing that we are going to play this right. Now the ball is in your court to make a decision on whether you want to play ball with us or you want to jump off the cliff of the unknown that is Austin, because you have nothing concrete there whatsoever, not even close to having anything concrete.
And that's what I also think it's as much a direct appeal to MLS as it is, you know, engaging with Precourt, because you just have to wonder at what point does Don Garber, you know, say that this PR hit that it's been, you look at what's going on in Austin, you're looking at potentially settling for a literal former toxic waste dump, that your owner, that for as much as Anthony Precourt, you know, might be coy, and it's unknown, you know, here among media circles and otherwise about how much money he actually does or doesn't have or has or hasn't put into this crew team or does or doesn't have for Austin. Don Garber, you know that. And the rest of the owners, for the most part, they're aware of what those numbers are. So when you're seeing that there are serious Columbus investors that are looking to get in on this, that you're going to be able to, regardless pretty much of what they pay for it, it's going to be a profit from what Anthony Precourt paid for it. At what point do you again, and you've got a re-energized fan base in here and an avenue to get that new stadium under new ownership, whether that's in the Arena District or some of the other sites that have been talked about. At what point do you say, hey, yeah, let's, you know what, we can get Anthony set up with an expansion team in Austin in a little bit or set up elsewhere, but right now this looks like this is a sure thing. We can get a sure thing in Columbus, we can get that money, we can get the stadium, and we can get this terrible PR nightmare away from us and still go about it with Austin. This is the first time where parallel paths has been, you know, a reality, and it's because the Columbus Foundation, Columbus City Leaders, and Save the Crew have willed it into being.
I guess my concern is that MLS still views Columbus in the same light, and that, you know, it's been here for 20 plus years. You know, what really is going to change? Obviously, there's this buzz because, you know, you got threatened with potentially losing it. But, you know, does that really get corporate sponsors to front the cash? Does that get fans to come to the games? Well, I think we can all agree that we think so. You know, we're here, we're paying attention to the day-to-day stuff. I know Don Garber has a whole league to run, so I'm just, you know, I hope that that's being taken, you know, as seriously there. As opposed to maybe what could be a quick fix in Austin, where you move there, despite the fact that there wasn't a lot of buzz beforehand, I assume that there will be because it's something new to do in Austin, at least for a little while. And then you open a new stadium in a couple of years, and that usually gets fans out and people involved. Instead
but they get their new stadium through this, with the new ownership. You get the new hotness, and that's what MLS runs on.
Yeah, and I agree. I just hope that they're paying attention to it that way, and not, you know, having attention focused elsewhere and you know, kind of having already made up their mind on this and letting Anthony kind of handle the situation. I don't think that's what's going on. I think MLS it's come up enough that, you know, Don Garber has had to stay up to date on things, but, you know, it's just a concern of mine that maybe they, you know, in the course of running a league are not paying as close attention as maybe we hope they are.
I think whatever gains they're going to gain in the short term, and by short term, I'm going to say in the next 10 years, I think is not going to be any good. I mean, whatever gains you're going to make in 10 years is not, you're still starting from zero. Now, you have a place that you've had for 20 years, and if you look at other major league teams, or even other sports that, you know, we'll go back to the Nate Beckman piece from earlier this year about how local ownership of a local sports team plays a much significant role, a bigger role in how corporates and even sometimes how residents of that area support that team. So if we look at, you know, if anybody from the Columbus Partnership or their group or whatever that is making this proposal and saying we would like to see the books in order to see how viable we can make this, I think them being local owners or locally based owners that have community connections, that have the ability to be able to really do more than send a form letter and see who bites when it comes to sponsorship. I think that makes a huge difference, but MLS has to be willing to be like, okay, so I think whoever makes the proposal to buy this team has to include a lot of these different things. Maybe not promise, like, okay, promise a new stadium and that you're going to try to grow, but I think the viability of having local ownership will change the support. I think even the viability of having a new stadium, even if it's 5 years down the road instead of 2 years down the road, still will generate a different level of viability for this team and possibly growth. And now you have a fan base that is mobilized and willing to, in not so many words, do the team's work for them.
Mm-hmm.
In selling this stadium and selling this product, I think you're gonna have the league itself look at this in a different situation. This is also a league that I think is now having an attendance crisis also.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's an early season thing, but the attendance numbers outside of, you know, Atlanta and Seattle, and even Seattle has gone down significantly from where it used to be. You're starting to see that there are some issues that MLS is falling into that are not just Columbus-based. You're now starting to see these issues in other markets that are not 1.0 markets, maybe in 2.0 markets. So there's a lot in there to unpack, but in the great scheme of things, I think it's very smart what Columbus Partnership is doing, and hopefully MLS will be wise enough to know that Precourt doesn't have as much money as he says he does, or as the rest of us think he does. And these guys are coming in with proven business acumen, with proven business progress and growth, with proven community relations. And that is going to make, I believe, that's going to make a big difference in how this goes down.
Yeah, you talk about attendance. I mean, not throwing rocks from glass houses, but that game in Bridgeview, I mean, maybe 4,000.
Yeah, I actually asked.
Now it's 11.
Yeah, I asked Andrew Erickson today, because he was there, what he thought the attendance was. And he said maybe 6. But again, you know, like Sam said, I do think some of it has to do with the early season weather. I mean, that was another terribly
game.
Yeah. But I real quick while we're talking about that, I think credit to the Crew fans. I think there were around 70 Crew fans that made the trip. You know, to sit in that weather is would be pretty miserable, especially, you know, witnessing a loss and whatnot. But good for them for getting out there.
Absolutely, and the good men there at 3-1 Crew, the Chicago-based supporters group, men and women, who were kind enough to host them. A couple other interesting developments on the Save the Crew front, comments, one of them coming out kind of, you know, shortly after Columbus's loss to Chicago, and that was the statement from Justin Meerum correcting the record via Twitter, about from his comments in his interview earlier that day that had been released with Taylor Twellman. Meerum had commented in there about, I'll see if I can't pull up the original quote, but it was something to the effect of believing that there are some markets that are holding MLS back, and then made a remark about how it was difficult in Columbus playing second fiddle to Ohio State as a Michigan man, and that he was glad to be out of that. Our own Alex Stanek actually had tweeted Meerum, and he responded saying, hey, will you correct the record here? Because he was getting some vitriol from Crew Twitter for the clickbait headline for that article, and Meerum came back and said, clarified that he was again making a joke about being out of Columbus and Ohio State because he is a Michigan man, and that he furthermore going on the record saying that the reason he asked to leave was because of the situation that Anthony Precourt has created that here in Columbus as the owner. And that kind of affirms some of the stuff that we were saying in the off season about during the playoffs, rather, about Ola and Justin Meerum's requests, that those are requests that likely wouldn't have come if Anthony Precourt hadn't made the announcement that he had.
Yeah, I thought Justin's comments were interesting. I think first, you know, Justin loved this club, you know, Ohio State Michigan rivalry aside, and I know he took some stuff for that, but, you know, I mean, he's mentioned multiple times that he would have liked, you know, while he was here, that he would have liked to finish his career here. I know he was very comfortable in Columbus and, you know, liked playing for Greg, liked his teammates. I mean, you know, these guys get along very well. They that's one of the things that they do. And Justin was a big part of that. But, you know, I do think that it's difficult for these guys, and, you know, they saw it after the announcement and into the playoffs last year. You know, they don't get asked about it as much locally, but, you know, I've been to, you know, a couple of road games this year and a few last year after the announcement, and literally the away media, you know, that's what they're going to ask about, because, you know, that, you know, aside from whatever happens in the game, I think that's something that most people are interested in reading about, and, you know, and how are you guys dealing with this and whatnot? And it's basically the same questions, you know, every time. And, you know, to constantly answer that and to just have that reminded to you after every game, you know, especially coming off losses and things like that. You know, I can see where that certainly starts to weigh on players. And, you know, while it would have been great to keep Justin in black and gold, I don't know if you can blame him for wanting to get away and whatnot from those type of things. So, you know, I don't think Justin would say a negative thing about this team. You know, he gave so much to this club, and, you know, I think there's a very much a mutual respect there. And I think he would certainly like to see it stay in Columbus.
I've got the tweet here. My thank God comment was a sarcastic joke about being a Michigan man in Ohio, and I love Columbus and always will. Never spoke bad about the club, especially the fans, coaches, and my brothers I played with. I just could never support an owner moving the team. One love, CBus, and notably using the hashtag Save the Crew. So Meerum joining, also we saw Eric Gehrig, former Crew player and current Chicago Fire assistant coach, speaking out on Twitter using the hashtag Save the Crew about that move. We saw in the offseason last year, Matt Lampson, Brad Stuver has spoken out about it on Twitter, but I think it's especially interesting interesting to see these statements coming out over the weekend. When you have to think that players have been instructed by the league not to comment on this Save the Crew movement and what's going on off the field in Columbus, and if they are commenting, that it be something along the lines of what Michael Bradley farted out after the playoffs last year, criticizing the Columbus market, basically reading the exact words off of Dan Kortzmarch's paper.
Yeah, I mean, what do you expect? This is sports. It's like people who demand honesty from Berhalter. Of course, this is going to happen, and it is what it is. I'm glad that some of the players are starting to be like, no, this is not fair, and this shouldn't be happening, and that's good. That's good, and I think it's going to come out more. And I think the league is starting to feel that pressure. Yeah, no, it's two former Crew players, but I'm starting to see more and more tweets from fans from other teams that are like, you know what, this joke has gone on long enough, and that MLS needs to get its act together. So, players finally saying things, I'm honestly glad. And I have, you know, I love Eric Gehrig. I used to talk to him all the time. Great guy, and he loved Columbus, and he loved being here. Justin, of course, he loved being here too, and had it not been for the whole situation with Precourt's attempt to move the Crew, you know, this might have been a team that still had Ola Kamara and that still had Justin Miram and, you know, things of that nature. But man, I appreciate that they are stepping up, and I'm interested to see whether, one, they get any pushback from the league about this or from their local team, whether it's Chicago or Orlando, and two, whether we start seeing other players from other teams talking about how Columbus should not be moved. So that's, you know, that's how I feel about it, and I would like to see the players, more players and more even coaches talk about it, but I worry about the pushback from MLS.
Well, and I think part of the reason these guys are able to say what they're able to say is because they've lived here. You know, they've experienced the city. They've experienced when this team, you know, does well and makes playoff runs, how the city does embrace this team, you know, at least in the past. I think it's tough for me to imagine, you know, a guy who, you know, hasn't been a part of that to really have too much emotion. I mean, unless you're somebody who grew up with the league and kind of really knows the history of it, you know, to them, it's just another team. Now, you know, it would be great if other players spoke out, but, you know, the comments by Bradley are a guy who, you know, has played for big market teams, has played for Europe, expects, you know, sellouts and whatnot, and has gotten that in Toronto and, you know, had a big city in New York City when he played for the Red Bulls. You know, so I can, while I vehemently disagree with his comments, I think that I can see his perspective, having never, you know, really been a part of the smaller market community, and specifically Columbus. And I'm just curious if other players will see that perspective more so, and just, you know, is Columbus another team that we don't necessarily need?
But I think that goes back to Bradley's personality overall, and the fact that he is a grade A douche to start with, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't see a lot of, well, to be fair, have you heard a lot of fans, even outside of Columbus, that talk fondly about Michael Bradley ever since he started playing for the national team?
Not after her last.
No, but I mean, ever since he started playing, with his dad being the head coach. I don't think Bradley has always been on the positive side.
I think when he was with Roma, I think since his return to MLS, because you were getting, when he was with Roma, you know, some of those write-ups in, I think, Sports Illustrated and others, you know, talking about how he was the future of the national team, and it was great to have this, you know, American player playing at the highest level, or one of the highest levels and highest leagues. And then, you know, as he took that step back,
I think, you know, a lot of fans and fans of the national team criticize that. And then, you know, suddenly he's there playing, you're playing against him, and you start recognizing all those little characteristics that maybe make him a great guy to have on your team when you're cheering for him in red, white, and blue, but somebody that you absolutely abhor when he's lined up for the other team.
Yeah, exactly. I think for sure, you know, him coming back to MLS and especially going to Toronto with starting that, not even a resurgence, but their upward trend of, you know, that becoming an MLS kind of super team. I can certainly see why fans, even fans of the U.S. national team, kind of got a distaste. And then, as you mentioned, Bart, the recent performances of the national team and whatnot, you know, none of that helped his image. And I think a lot of guys that come back to MLS from over there that, you know, could have stayed over there potentially kind of get that mantra put on them.
Certainly interesting, and we'll see if more players do follow suit. And I think, Pat, you do have the really good point there is, you know, when is it that we're going to start getting players and coaches from that don't have direct ties to the Columbus market? I think that, you know, could be a point where, you know, suddenly the floodgates are open and then it'll be difficult for something for MLS to control the narrative. Not that they've controlled it thus far. We're not at that point yet, though, but still ways to go. And I think we should probably get to previewing the game coming up this weekend against DC United. It'll be a second matchup for Columbus against DC. They won that game earlier this season, probably their most definitive performance of the season. Oh, and then, yeah, we do have, before we get to that, though, a quick another interesting little wrinkle that came out today. If you blinked, you might have missed it, but Crew will be wearing a new eco jersey. I think all of MLS will be wearing them. Looks like these just plain white jerseys. Maybe they're a different color for the away team, I assume. They'll be wearing those for the game, not this weekend, but the following weekend at home on April the 21st for Earth Day, I believe, is a celebration. I guess they're eco-friendly because they didn't use any dyes on them. So they're great. And if you're listening now and you'd like to get one of these jerseys, tough luck. They're all gone.
Yeah, I think that's what happens when you only make roughly 100 for each team. And, you know, I think despite the fact that attendance has been low, there are still more than 100 passionate Crew fans out there that will buy something like this. But nice of MLS to do. They did it last year. Kind of a cool idea. That was only a few teams that wore them. And now this year they opened it up to the whole league. So, you know, I mean, not only does it help to be able to sell some jerseys, but, you know, kind of a nice little gesture to be eco-friendly, I guess.
If I wasn't a total slob, I would have totally bought one. But I don't think it would have made it to the first wash before it became some sort of dingy off-white color that looks awful. But I think it will make a great contrast with the second batch of the Save the Crew Bumblebee jerseys that are hitting the market soon. Or not hitting the market, but, you know, people who order them are getting them. I think those, they stand out in the stands a lot. It's kind of interesting. And they're all over the place. They're not just in the Nordic. So that's kind of cool. If mine wasn't so tight, I would actually wear it.
I like how you turned eco jerseys into Save the Crew talk. Well done, sir.
As it should always.
Hey,
be.
I master transitions somehow. But, no, I think it's cool that they're making teams wear it. But I don't know. It's a pretty neat looking jersey. It's like as I joked earlier. I think we have a funeral kit. And now we have a wedding kit.
Yeah.
So, this I could see somebody totally getting married in these. That would be hilarious.
I would just like to see, you know, I would like to see one of those jerseys, a before and after pic for one of those jerseys on a dollar beer night or a buck a brat night. But back to the game coming up this weekend. Not in DC. Had to catch myself there. Patrick, Sam, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. That the Crew will be playing because, again, RFK, Dunzo, Toyota, or Audi Field, still not done yet for DC. So this game will be at the Navy Naval Academy's field in, I assume, Annapolis, Maryland?
Yep. Yeah, the football stadium there, which I've never been to, but I've heard very good things about. I think the downside for these soccer games there is the field's pretty narrow. Greg kind of compared it to New York City today. I don't know if it's quite as narrow as that at Yankee Stadium, but you know, something to keep in mind for this game. They tend to narrow the practice fields before they play at Yankee Stadium. They haven't done that as of today at practice. They'll still practice Thursday and Friday, so maybe they will, just to kind of get used to that. But it is definitely a more narrow field. It's turf, but I think the one thing there is DC is, I believe, only played one other game there. So, you know, almost equally is not used to playing in that venue. But, I don't know if the venue makes much of a difference. I've never been one to really buy the whole argument about playing on turf. It does change the game some, but I think you get used to it pretty quick. So, you know, I don't know how much playing there is going to affect the actual play of the game. I do think it'll be cool for the players, though. That's you know, if you're a fan of college football and the Army Navy game and things like that, you know, Navy's used to be a historic program and whatnot, and you know, just kind of a cool thing to get to do, I guess.
Ooh, throwing some shade there.
Is it Navy that plays the triple option?
Yes.
Or is that Air Force? Yeah. See, so maybe DC will come out with a triple option, or not. Sorry, I had to throw that in there.
Wow.
Well, and you've got a DC team that is coming off of, trying to see what their last performance was over the weekend.
They were off
last weekend.
Off?
Okay, yeah. That's probably why we're not seeing it.
Yeah, still winless.
Yeah, so you know, a team that's had its struggles, and that Columbus had put in probably its most complete performance of the season against in that win at Maffrey Stadium. So, what sort of changes do you think Greg might have in store, or does he trot out the same 11 and just try to do it again? I guess one of the questions is Lalas Abubakar, obviously out of the lineup last week after starting most of the games. I assume that may have been an injury precaution, but I'm not sure. Maybe Josh Williams has replaced him to take that starting center back position again.
Lalas is healthy. I think they just a couple games in a row where Lalas didn't put in, you know, the best. Obviously, they took him out at halftime a few games ago and whatnot. You know, and I think Josh is now healthy and fit. And, you know, this may be because I think they're both equally as comfortable playing alongside Jonathan. And you may even see at times Josh and Lalas in there together. You know, I think this is a center back pairing that they can kind of tweak a little bit. But as for this game, I'll be interested to see just how this team does. Obviously, the last time these two teams played, both teams were missing national team guys. So, you know, the Crew will obviously have Zach and Will back, but DC will have some guys back as well. So, you know, maybe a little bit better DC team. And obviously, you have to go to not their venue, but Annapolis. So, you know, I do imagine that this will be a more difficult game than the one in Columbus. I still don't think DC is very good. You know, at least not now. I do think there's potential there, but I do also think that you have to be a little bit wary of a desperate team looking for its first win. We saw that last week. You know, Chicago, you know, they were talking about it on the broadcast when I was watching the game, that, you know, after getting a draw at home against Portland, the idea was to take that next step and let's get that first win. So, you know, I think DC will have that same approach, and maybe look at Columbus as a little bit vulnerable coming off two straight losses.
Yeah, I think honestly it's going to really depend on how quickly the Crew strike. If the Crew strike first and fairly early in the first half, I think you see the game open up a little bit. And if the game does open up, that really plays in the crew's favor. If they don't, and they, you know, DC packs the box like Chicago did and hope that the back line makes a mistake somewhere, or if they do a high press and hoping to make that line make a mistake, that could be a problem, especially, you know, in an unfamiliar stadium. Even though, like, most of those new turfs are not as bad as the old style turfs, those little pieces of rubber getting into your shoes are annoying as hell, and they'll probably bother your playing more than the actual flooring itself. But yeah, I think this even carries over from last year, is that this team needs to score early, and when they score early, things tend to generally roll their way. Unlike what happened in the Vancouver game. But in the Vancouver game, you had breakdowns in the back to a certain degree. So, yes, score early, open up the game a little bit. This could play in the crew's favor.
Absolutely, and it should be an interesting match. And you'd think as well, I mean, adding Will Trapp in there, the steadying presence that he provides for this team, and then, of course, Zach Steffen. It will be interesting, I think, you know, this performance. Obviously, he finished out that game strong against Chicago, but that was a Chicago team that wasn't generating many chances. I am going to be curious to see how he approaches this game, if it is something that he's been able to just kind of brush off, as you mentioned, Greg indicated, Pat, and that his teammates have indicated after the goal last weekend. But, you know, what are they supposed to say? That Zach's dwelling on it and he's going to, you know, it's in the back of his mind all the time? No, of course they're going to say that. And I tended to believe he's going to, but, you know, this is his opportunity. This is where we'll hope to see that. And that it doesn't become something that kind of plagues him as it plagued Steve Clark, who, you know, for all intents and other purposes, was a hell of one of the better goalkeepers that's played for this franchise. But, you know, he couldn't really master playing the ball out from the back. It hasn't been a problem for Zach so far in his career. But for that performance against Chicago, let's hope it remains not a problem. We'll I think get into picks unless you guys have any other comments to do that. While you guys are thinking about your picks, I want to just give a quick shout out to our terrific sponsors at the Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street, and also online at oldnortharcade.com. You can catch out what they've got on tap, their food as well, the food trucks, and some of the games too. It's always a good place to go, a good place to watch the game this weekend while they're in Annapolis. Now, Patrick, what do we think the result's going to be there in Annapolis?
I'm really torn on this game because I do think the Crew's a better team. I do think, you know, they should be able to go in there and get a win. I'm always nervous about, well, first of all, games on the road, but games at DC. I know this isn't at RFK, but, you know,
no raccoons,
right?
At least to our knowledge,
right? I think Navy keeps better upkeep, but I'm gonna go 2-1 Crew. I think they rebound. I think they avoid a third straight loss. I'm tempted to pick a tie, but I'm gonna take a note out of your book, Bart, and be positive. go 2-1 Crew.
All right, 2-1 Crew sounded good. Sam, what do you got?
I'm kind of torn like Murph is, because we haven't seen the consistency yet. Obviously, it's the beginning of the season. I keep having to remind myself of that. But I'm hoping that the return of Will Trapp and Zach Steffen is enough to overpower whatever it is that DC does. And I'm actually going to go, 2-0 Crew.
2-0. All right. I'm going to say it's a 3-1 victory for Crew. I didn't have too much difficulty with that. No, I do think, you know, I'm going to go with, I think David Akam gets on the board there for United. I still think that was a great a pickup for them, along with Yamil Assad, who we didn't even really touch on. But I think we're finally going to get that first goal against an American team, albeit a team based in D.C., which is in the state. But because they're in Maryland, we'll finally get the first goal from Giassi Zardes against an American team. And let's throw in one for Christian Martinez and Frederico Higuain for good measure to round it out and get the crew back on track with a win and prevent them from dropping that three straight games, as you alluded to, Pat, which would be the first time since, I believe, 2014. Well, fellas, any other parting thoughts before we wrap this one up? Nothing?
Nope.
People shouldn't freak out. Even if the team loses, it's okay. It's better for these losses to get out now than it is, you know, in August or September.
I assume that Ralph's picking 4-0 for DC.
Yep. Yeah, Ralph texted his picks. Ralph is sick right now, but he texted his pick and said
big DC 4-0.
Yep. 4-0 DC. Also a note, we
and speaking
said
of Ralph's
week,
Ralph's prediction, that is not pretty dang cool, just saying.
We did mention last week that we were going to do a homework assignment and pick our teams, one player from each year, two teams. But unfortunately, without Ralph and Alex here, we're going to hit delay on that. For what it's worth, I did pick my team, and it is dope, both of them. I don't even know who would win yet, probably the later team. But anyway, we'll look forward to that next week, as well as recapping a thrilling win over DC United. So we will talk to you then, and until then, bye, buddies.